Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So I hope that everybody had a fantastic weekend. Since it started to thaw a bit in Chicago, I was able to get back to my hobby that I really enjoy, which is woodworking, under the guise of Gator Bill Furnishings, for those of you that aren't aware. So spent some time outside doing some building and woodworking, and it's just a great stress reliever. So had a fantastic weekend from that perspective. There's a couple of things, though, that have been happening that I wanted to address. I don't like to make this a political podcast. I'll throw jabs in there here and there, as you've heard me do. But I think there's a good thing and a bad thing going on. I think the good thing is that the House of Representatives sent the Equality Act to the Senate for LGBTQ individuals. And so hopefully that actually finds its way through this time and that all Americans and all individuals now will find themselves sort of protected and guaranteed by the federal civil rights laws. So that would be a fantastic win, a great story, and just something that should have been done a very long time ago. On the flip side, we have a lot of unbelievable, uncalled-for violence towards Asian Americans across the U.S. There's a lot of causes for that that you can get involved in and donate to, but it's not a great time. It's ridiculous that it's happening. So thoughts and prayers to those that have been affected, and hopefully people can stop being jerks and can just move on with their lives and stop hurting innocent people like this, because it's absolutely ridiculous. So let's go ahead and jump into the undercard now. We're going to kick things off with a racist robot segment. It's one of my favorite things to call attention to. It's probably one of the most interacted awards that we give out on the podcast from all the neaters out there. A lot of people submit to this as they come across it. You know, it's a passion of mine to call these things out and bring attention to these issues where artificial intelligence and technology is not representative of the society that we live in and is skewed in one direction or another. And we've got another instance of that. But before I jump in, I also would be remiss. I meant to mention this at the onset. Just a massive thank you. These last couple of weeks have probably been the most heavily interactive weeks that I've had with listeners of the podcast. It's been supported on a variety of different channels. People have been sharing it and giving positive feedback, asking questions. It's just been an unbelievable past couple of weeks. And I just want to thank everybody for taking the time not only to listen, but to rate and review and to interact with me and provide me your thoughts or send me articles that you think would be interesting for me to read as well. But back to the racist robot segment. Obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic. I shouldn't say middle. Maybe we're on the back half, light at the end of the tunnel. People are getting vaccinated. You know, things are starting to look a little bit better. The J&J vaccine was just approved here in the United States as well, so that's a good sign. But during the battle for COVID-19, you know, your pulse oximeter, kind of like that thing your Apple Watch tries to do and isn't necessarily all that accurate at doing, but measuring the oxygen levels in your blood, you know, that tool that they put on your hand. We've all probably had it done at some point or another. And it's increasingly important, obviously, when you're fighting a pandemic that does interface with the lungs and causes a bunch of oxygen issues in the body. And unfortunately, it was found by the Food and Drug Administration that it yields inaccurate results for people with darker skin. Now, I don't even know how this is possible to go missed. We've talked about many things in the racist robot segments over the last 2 years, 2+ years, but this one is definitely up there. You've now got a medical device that doctors have been using for God knows how long that's increasingly important for anyone that's in the hospital that has any kind of illness that might be affecting the amount of oxygen in your blood. And you have a device to do that that has not been tested appropriately across people of all skin colors. Just absolutely ridiculous that the skin pigmentation could affect the accuracy of this device. I guess good that it's been noticed so that it can get fixed, but it needs to be fixed and it needs to be fixed rapidly. And so that's our racist robots winner for this week's episode of the podcast.
And that brings us to the final topic for this week's undercard. I'd be remiss if we didn't at least take a look at all of the chaos happening down under in Australia with Facebook and Google. So Australia decided to pass a law. It was the first one of its kind in the world that was sort of designed initially to try to make Google and Facebook pay for news content on their platforms. And so you might ask, like, well, what's the reason for this? You know, Australia, from an advertising perspective, there were some numbers from 2018 that I saw in an article that for every $100 Australian that are spent by advertisers there, $49 of that went to Google and $24 of that went to Facebook. So you're talking about 73 out of every $100 going to those two tech giants. And like everywhere else in the world, people are looking at Facebook and Google and others, and they're trying to find ways to sort of knock them off their pedestal a bit. And this was yet another situation where this time Australia tried to take a different route by basically trying to force Facebook and Google to have payment deals directly with news organizations. And it's important to note that the legislation itself is referred to as the Media Bargaining Code, the News Media Bargaining Code. And in the back and forth, so Australia has iterated on this a little bit because Facebook decided to just turn off all news access. And Google threatened to turn off its main search engine down in Australia as well as a result of this. So they forced Australia to come to the table and negotiate a little bit on this News Media Bargaining Code. But it did pass this past Thursday. Now, the goal from Australia's perspective was to try to commit Facebook and Google to invest millions of dollars in local digital content from a news perspective. And there's arbitrators that are involved if they can't decide what a fair price is with domestic media. But in short, they wanted more involvement with local media. Now, that both Google and Facebook have put a ton of statements out where they think that they're already helping news publishers by driving traffic back to their sites from their platforms, and that Facebook and Google both believe that they're helping people find that content in the first place, so on and so forth. And so this has been the crux of the argument. Now, where it all netted out is that Google and Facebook have committed to spending about $1 billion each in the news industry globally over the next 3 years. But this whole concept of media and the news and fake news and everything else that's been happening across social content, not just with Facebook and Google, but also on Twitter, is something that's not going to go away anytime soon. Australia wanted to try to get these big tech giants to invest a bit in their local economy and their local news media to bring them up a bit and make sure that they were promoted accordingly across those platforms in their markets. But from Facebook and Google's perspective, they're trying to run this open platform where they do what they want. But regardless, they're committing money to local and global investment in news coverage. And Australia, you know, got to pass their law, but with a little bit of amendments after Facebook took their ball and went home and Google threatened to do the same. So from my perspective, it was a pretty amusing story to watch all of this unfold. It's not a good look for Facebook. I don't think that their approach made a whole lot of sense. Like, we're just going to shut off all news on our platform as part of a negotiation tactic. But I guess it worked in that legally they were able to get some amendments to their liking with the Australian legislature. But it's, again, just a brand image issue, again, more for Facebook than Google, I think, in this particular story because of the actions that they took. And regardless, it's probably good to have these media giants sort of investing in local news content, provided that content's being vetted and making sure that it's legitimate, which is still an issue that needs to be solved for in a major way around the globe. So that wraps up this week's undercard. We'll go ahead and jump into the main event. It is report quarter. I think every first quarter of the year always has a bunch of new reports out from different technology vendors, from the analysts. And I came across another interesting one that hit one of my inboxes from Advertiser Perceptions. They partnered with Treasure Data on this one, and it's a state of CDP study. And they did the survey in the second half of 2020. They interviewed what appears to be 101 people, not Dalmatians. And they were looking for organizations with revenue north of $500 million. And they were working with CDPs, so on and so forth, because obviously that's the crux of this survey. And that's what someone like Treasure Data cares about. And for those of you that know where I work in my professional life outside of this podcast, I obviously work with Celebris and we have a customer data platform as well. So I like to keep my finger on these surveys and see what people are saying and also use this to validate a lot of my assumptions about many of these sort of assembly CDPs that are out there that in my opinion, don't do a good job of knocking down the silos. So let's dig into this report and see what we can uncover and bring to light that sits behind some of the charts. Just by way of getting into the people in the survey, they were asked what kind of solutions or platforms they use for customer data, and the top four answers are not a surprise. 100% of them use a CDP. I'll be curious to know what that actually means and what they define a CDP to be, because that wasn't something that was abundantly clear. CRM, or customer relationship management, a data management platform, and a data warehouse or a data lake on-premise were sort of the top four platforms that were being used to manage customer data. So no surprises out of the gate. From my perspective, where it did start to get interesting was when we started to look at the use cases. From my perspective, they were asked what the CDP common use cases were. And there wasn't a whole lot of large agreement across the survey. The highest percentage was 63%. The lowest of this list was 41%. So 63% of the respondents said that they use it to personalize digital campaigns or to unify data and maintain customer profiles. Now, on the other side of that, at 41% was deliver better in-person or call center customer service. Some of the ones in the middle were things like mapping out customer journey, reporting on campaign performance and ROI, building audience segments and targets, extracting advanced customer attributes, strengthening targeting for sales outreach and engagement, and enable website personalization, which was very far down at the bottom at 44% of the responses. So when you're looking at these use cases, I mean, one, the fact that if there's 100% of people in this survey using CDPs and only 63% were using them to personalize campaigns and unify data, then from my perspective, they're having a very difficult time, these individuals, with real time. And they're struggling with knocking down the silos. Because if you look at how this is being brought about, you can assume that given the fact that 63% was the top answer and it was focused on digital and customer profiles, they're not knocking down the silos with a lot of these assembly style CDPs like Treasure Data. And if you dig into this further, you know, customer profile is obviously important. If you don't have the profile of an individual in a meaningful way, you know, then how are you able to activate it all across these things? When you look at the fact that, you know, for this audience, they're not using this to do audience targeting or segmentation. They're not using this to enable website personalization. They're just looking at campaigns and being able to personalize that and unify profiles. But that unification seems to me like it's purely from a digital channel perspective. So what do you actually consider a profile would be one of the questions I'd love to ask the individuals that responded to this. You know, the use cases themselves, even things like call center customer service, which should inherently benefit from digital data in real time, to me shows that organizations are landing these technologies into the marketing stack and they don't really know what to do with them, or they're picking subpar solutions that are largely data traffic cops, but they don't have the data to bring to the traffic cop to direct to the right places in the first place because of all of the silos. So to me, that was a core read here is behind the scenes of that use case scenario. But the real issues start to come to the forefront again in a section of the survey where they talk about the state of data unification with a CDP. And there were sort of two answers you could give: currently unified or hoping to unify. Now, CRM data was the highest. It was 76% of the responses said that they were currently unifying, 10% said that they were hoping to unify that. The next highest was transactional data. And then there's a significant drop when we start to get into some of the things that should be inherently part of any digital transformation. Website visits, first-party customer profile data was less than half. Mobile and device level data was less than half. Product usage data, less than half. Third-party data was at 45%. That's probably a good thing. It should probably be a lot lower, because what does unification of third-party data mean if that third-party data is not accurate? Anonymized digital data, 36%. App data, 32% unified. So this is where the issue sort of comes even more to the forefront, in my opinion, for the individuals that have responded to this survey. And I think it's a good view into what we're seeing in the industry today. A lot of solutions claim to be a customer data platform, but very many of them, almost all of them, struggle with digital, struggle with mobile, struggle with a profile that can span across channel and across device and provide you with an identity graph in an owned and controlled manner that allows you to sort of interface with all of these different technologies and knock down those walls. I mean, less than half of the respondents say that they've unified first-party customer profile data, and anonymous digital data was at 36%. So again, that highlights the struggle that these organizations are having with their marketing stack to be able to persist and understand the anonymous visits such that when that person identifies, you can tie that profile of an individual together with all of the anonymous sessions that had happened previously so you can have a more complete picture of the individual. I thought this was astounding going through this because to me it screamed off the pages that there's a massive problem here and that organizations are picking the wrong CDP for their businesses in the majority of these cases. And to me, the story really built out even further as I went through the report a bit deeper. There was a breakdown of sort of the CDP impact on success metrics. And again, it was a two-part answer. You could say that you saw a significant improvement or you saw some improvement. And some of the metrics were things like online sales, engagement, cross-sell, reducing abandonment, customer acquisition, conversion rate, brand lift, so on and so forth. From a significant improvement standpoint, only a few of those crossed north of 40% in the responses. The majority of the answers weighed heavily towards some improvement and not significant improvement. And some of these things are very simple, like reduced funnel abandonment and customer acquisition, so and engagement, sort of getting people more involved. I mean, again, to me, highlights the main issues that I'm mentioning, which is a technology decision is being made by a team in a silo and being implemented in that silo with no real thought about how to roll it out across the enterprise or how to implement enterprise technology. I think the struggle with mobile and identity are massive issues because it's not completing the picture as individuals jump across device and channel. And organizations are making digital-only decisions, and they're making subpar decisions in those channels, and it's not leaving them with any room for potential growth to bring their first-party data sets together in a meaningful way or to build a true identity graph or really any of the things that you need to generate real improvement. And I think potentially, from my perspective, knowing what some of these vendors charge out there, namely one of the big red ones as an example, you know, you've got a ton of money going into these solutions. You don't exactly have a whole lot of money left to do anything else when you're making those types of bets. So I think that's playing into this as well. And so as a final point here, as we wrap up this week's episode, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about privacy compliance and the CDP's role in that from the perspective of this survey. You had two responses. Again, it plays a major role or it plays a minor role. The largest answer for what their CDP plays a major role in was really twofold. One was building GDPR CCPA compliant marketing lists and centralizing and unifying customer data. For them to say that that's a major role, but then when we got into the use cases and what that meant and the fact that they're struggling with unifying mobile data and all these other channels, I'm not really sure how they can respond to that. I think this is a situation where people knew that they had to say yes to that and versus being honest, because that's what people are going to want to see when they read the report. They're going to want to see that you're being compliant. They're going to want to see that you're unifying customer data. But when you dig into some of the other answers around privacy compliance, you can kind of see the real story. I mean, half or less of the respondents basically said that the CDP was playing a major role in opt-out or data retention or, you know, consolidating and enforcing all of these various policies or right to be forgotten, so on and so forth. So to me, I think people selected a major role for the things that they know that they should, like GDPR and CCPA and unifying customer data, because that's why it's called a customer data platform. But to me, I think reading through the tea leaves here, it seems like for the majority of these individuals that it's just has not been a successful deployment of their CDPs and the technologies that they're choosing or what they've got in their marketing stack just don't seem to have the right keys to unlock all of the potential for their digital transformation programs. But with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this week's episode. Thank you again so much for taking the time to listen, and a big thank you to all my neaters out there who continue to contribute to the podcast and try to grow the listenership therein. Have a great rest of your week, folks. We'll be back again next Monday with another new episode. And please don't forget to wear a damn mask.